This is Ann Arbor Stories. I'm Rich Redding. Throughout Ann Arbor's hospitable history, visiting heads of state, dignitaries, and geniuses in their fields have dined at the opulent Michigan League. Among them, Presidents Ford, Carter, and Bush the Elder, Leonard Bernstein, Chinese Ambassador Zhang Wenjin, all dined on sumptuous spreads while guests in Ann Arbor. Philippine President Ferdinand Marcos and his beauty queen wife Imelda received the same treatment when they sat down to a lavish luncheon with the governor, sitting UN president, and special guests on September 19th, 1966. Ferdinand Marcos, the newly elected president of the Philippines, son of a politician, a former lawyer, and a young and inspiring politician. Athletic, charismatic, sharp as a tack, and a decorated war hero. Ferdinand was also married to one of the most beautiful women in the country, who was also the daughter of a prominent Filipino aristocrat. Ferdinand and Imelda met during recess at a budget session in the Philippine Congress. He was in the house and she was attending with a friend, a classic meet-cute. They locked eyes across the room, and Ferdinand recognized Imelda immediately as a contestant in the recent Miss Manila and Miss Philippines pageants. He approached, made some small talk, and then asked her to stand back-to-back with him so they could measure heights. Ferdinand was 1 inch taller. Thus began what would come to be known in the Philippines as the 11-day whirlwind, a period of less than 2 weeks in which Ferdinand aggressively courted Imelda. She was a talented singer, one of the most beautiful women in the country, and also from an influential Filipino family. She would make the perfect first lady in Ferdinand's dream run for the presidency. Every day he showered her with flowers and gifts. Every day he showed up at her door with a marriage license in hand, begging her to sign. On day 11, she did. Together they wooed the country while Ferdinand rose from the House to the Senate, eventually running a populist presidential campaign, promising massive infrastructure projects, new jobs, and independence from outside interests. Marcos swept into office in 1965. Immediately, he began an aggressive round of infrastructure improvements that included the erection of a number of expensive monuments, but he also slowly edged the Philippines into involvement in the Vietnam War, contrary to his election promise to stay out of the conflict. The Filipino voters adored their charismatic new head of state and mostly forgave him for his policy shift, while the U.S. was overjoyed, viewing the Philippines and Marcos as a valuable ally in Southeast Asia. To build even closer relations with the Philippines, the U.S. government invited the Marcos to visit America, arranging for a 16-day trip to the United States, beginning September 14, 1966 in Washington, D.C. Just before the visit, the Philippines deployed 2,000 military advisors and army engineers to Vietnam to support the U.S. By the end of the war, the Philippines would commit more than 10,000 men to the conflict. Rain washed out a meticulously planned red carpet 21-gun salute welcome ceremony on the south lawn of the White House. Instead, President Lyndon Johnson and wife Lady Bird greeted Ferdinand and Imelda Marcos indoors to the sound of trumpets bouncing off the walls from the White House. The 6'4" Johnson and the much smaller Marcos sat side by side on a small couch conversing English, while Marcos's beauty queen wife, dressed in an impeccable soft pink dress, sat alone on a couch opposite, quietly considering the conversation. That night at a black tie state dinner, LBJ danced with Imelda, who wore a gorgeous canary ball gown, while Ferdinand cut some tile with Lady Bird. Interviewed by reporters at the White House, Marcos said, quote, "The United States is a nation on which we can depend for the salvation of mankind." 3 days later, on September 19th, Ferdinand and Imelda Marcos walked down the gangway of a U.S. Air Force 707 jet and were greeted by a small but enthusiastic crowd at Willow Run Airport. That included Governor and Mrs. Romney, and a contingent of media and important people. A UM student from the Philippines handed Imelda a giant bouquet, while the president of the UM Philippine Student Association stepped forward and shook Ferdinand's hand. It was 11:15 in the morning, and the Marcos were in for a whirlwind one-day visit that would include a convocation ceremony, a luncheon, a tour of Ann Arbor, and plenty of chit-chat. convoy of vehicles drove straight for the Clements Library for an invite-only convocation ceremony in which Marcos received an honorary Doctor of Civil Law degree from the university. In pre-written remarks, Marcos was likened to John F. Kennedy, shot dead in Dallas just 3 years earlier. The comparison wasn't far off. The Marcos were kind, well-spoken, and beautiful people, and local and state officials showered them with love, which Ferdinand returned in a warm, off-the-cuff speech praising the United States and his so far brief trip to Ann Arbor. He also spoke of his country's commitment to democracy and supporting the ideals that made America great. Quote, "If Vietnam is the testing ground of the new weapons of communism, then the Philippines is the testing ground of whether or not democracy can succeed in an underdeveloped country." The world wouldn't find out until 2011 that the United States had been storing nuclear weapons in the Philippines since 1966 and the beginning of the Marcos presidency, in direct violation of the Philippine Constitution. Marcos hid this fact from the rest of the country and continued to support the U.S. in Vietnam in exchange for tens of millions of dollars to help fund Marcos's public and personal projects. The economy was growing, new roads, bridges, and public buildings were going up, and the Marcoses looked radiant in every public appearance. Ferdinand won an easy re-election in 1969, becoming the first and last president of the Philippines to win a second term. His opponents warned about corruption, gross mismanagement, and a presidency of lies, but things just felt too good. After the convocation ceremony, the Marcoses were taken to the Michigan League for a 1:15 p.m. luncheon in the Vandenberg Room. There they ate with the Romneys, a handful of lucky UM dignitaries, and a few UM students from the Philippines who couldn't take their eyes off handsome Ferdinand and beautiful Imelda in her soft pink dress and matching slippers, looking even more exotic than she did on the cover of that week's Life magazine. Following the meal, Ferdinand and the men retired to Ingalls House to talk, while Imelda joined a tour group assembled just for her, boarding a bus to ride through the streets of Ann Arbor to see the city in the fall. Maybe the Filipino population should have known better. Maybe they should have questioned Ferdinand's checkered past. Son of a politician, but not a very good politician. While Ferdinand was studying law at the University of the Philippines, his father suffered a frustrating second bid loss for the position in the National Assembly. So Ferdinand, his father, and other family members went to the home of the winner, broke in, and shot him dead. Ferdinand was arrested, tried, convicted, and sentenced to death. The Marcos family appealed the ruling, taking the case all the way to the Supreme Court of the Philippines, where Ferdinand represented himself while studying for the bar in prison. Just after his 23rd birthday, the conviction was overturned, and Ferdinand and his family went free. There was also the money. The Marcos family wasn't poor, but where did Ferdinand get all the money to win the presidency in the first place, or finance his historic re-election campaign? Where did all that money come from? Opponents claimed it came from the Philippine National Treasury itself. Others told tales of the legend of Yamashita's gold. During World War II, the Japanese looted their vanquished enemies throughout Southeast Asia, transporting the treasure by ship, first to Singapore and then to the Philippines. The seas were too dangerous to move everything all the way back to Japan, but the plan was to transport the loot back to the Japanese home islands following victory in World War II. The Japanese didn't win World War II, and the loot remained hidden somewhere in the Philippines. They called it Yamashita's Gold, named after the Japanese general in command in the Philippines at the time. It was a cache of cash, precious metals, fine art, you name it, plundered from banks, depositories, businesses, museums, private homes, and religious buildings. The total worth was estimated to be in the tens of billions of dollars. Some thought it was a myth, some a fact. Treasure hunters descended on the Philippines looking for Yamashita's gold, until, allegedly, Ferdinand Marcos found it, and Ferdinand Marcos kept it. The people of the Philippines eventually caught on. The economy slowed, money for new projects dried up, public unrest increased in size and volume, with pro-communist forces growing in strength and plotting against the Marcos regime. Demonstrations, riots, and more than 15 public bombings occurred in the 2 years after Marcos' re-election, including the infamous Plaza Miranda bombing, in which hand grenades were tossed on stage at a political rally of 4,000 people, killing 9 and injuring 95. By 1972, a full-blown coup d'etat was in the works, and Marcos declared martial law, installing himself as dictator and elevating his wife to a position of power. He all but banned the free press, dissolved the media, dismantled civil liberties, shut down Congress, and arrested his political opponents and any of their vocal supporters. Thus began a terrible era of violence and greed in which the Marcos family did whatever it took to stay in power. Over the next dozen years, the Marcos regime made more than 70,000 politically motivated arrests, tortured more than 35,000 people, and were responsible for the murders and disappearances of 3,257 people. Quote, "It's easier perhaps and more comfortable to look back to the solace of a familiar and mediocre past," Marcos said, a year into martial law. "But the times are too grave and the stakes are too high for us to permit the customary concessions to traditional democratic processes." The Marcoses plundered the national treasury with increasing speed, eventually stealing between $5 and $10 billion, or around $20 billion today. They used the money to fund their campaign of terror, while also paying for a lavish lifestyle that included international travel, high-end real estate in Manhattan, and more than 1,000 pairs of shoes for Imelda. With international sentiment turning against him, Marcos tried to distract the world from the Philippines' ongoing martial law and a brewing revolution by paying to host a series of massive events. The Philippines welcomed the Miss Universe pageant in 1974, with special guests Brooke Shields and George Hamilton, and the next year hosted the Thrilla in Manila, the third and final boxing match between Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier. To secure this historic fight, Marcos was said to have personally paid Ali 4.5 million pesos, which the champ graciously accepted. The smokescreen worked well enough to keep the U.S. aid rolling in, growing from tens of millions to billions of dollars, and helping keep the Marcoses in power. The Marcos regime appointed family members and trusted advisors to positions of power, continued to brutally silence the opposition, and quadrupled the Philippines military to 270,000 troops. Death became an everyday part of life in the Philippines. When Imelda's bus returned to Ingles' house, Ferdinand and his wife reunited and slipped into cars that took them back to Willow Run. With San Francisco, Los Angeles, and Honolulu still on the itinerary, the Marcoses didn't get much of a chance to see the rest of Ann Arbor. They climbed the steps of the plane, Imelda carrying her bouquet, and Ferdinand with a hand on her lower back, and settled in for the flight to the West Coast. The plane rose into the air at 4 p.m. as Michiganders on the ground waved goodbye. Under intense pressure, even from supporters, Marcos ended martial law in 1981 and immediately opened elections, running unopposed to win a third term. Anti-Marcos violence from communist groups continued throughout the 80s, with thousands of military police and civilian deaths during constant clashes. The torture and murder continued. Hope for change landed on the tarmac at Manila International Airport in the summer of 1983. The leader of the Philippine opposition, Benigno Aquino Jr., had returned to the Philippines after 3 years in the United States, where he was being treated for a heart condition. Tanned, rested, and ready, Aquino landed at Manila and was shot dead on the tarmac less than a minute after stepping off the plane, killed by members of the Philippines military there to arrest him. Aquino's murder turned an isolated opposition movement into a national crusade. The U.S. began to distance itself from Marcos, drying up the funds so sorely needed to prop up his regime. Marcos's failing health and fleeing allies left him alone and vulnerable. He called a snap election in 1986 and won, though his opponents cried foul about rigged ballot boxes and widespread violence at the polls. On February 26, 1986, less than 3 weeks after the election, opposition forces overran parts of the capital and seized the offices of the state-run television network, forcing Marcos to barricade himself in the presidential palace. Marcos called the White House for help, but was curtly told to, quote, "cut and cut cleanly." The Marcoses packed as much stuff as they could, piled into four helicopters that flew them to Clark Air Force Base in the Philippines, where they boarded a U.S. Air Force Hercules C-130 that took them to Guam, and eventually Hickam Air Force Base in Hawaii. When citizens breached the walls of the palace and stormed the grounds, they famously found closets packed with more than 2,700 pairs of Imelda's shoes. Ferdinand's health was never great and deteriorated rapidly. In 1989, 3 years after he fled the Philippines, Marcos offered the Philippine government 90% of his personal wealth in exchange for being buried in his homeland next to his mother. The Filipino government declined. Ferdinand Marcos died in Honolulu on September 28, 1989. Ann Arbor still has its memories of the Marcos visit. The optimistic years before things went bad and Filipinos started to disappear. That day when the beautiful man and his beautiful wife landed at Willow Run, graced campus with their presence, and ate at the Michigan League, like the dignitaries before and after. People change, though maybe not so dramatically. An editorial in the Ann Arbor News dated September 21st, 1966, 2 days after their visit, read, quote, "The numerous heads of state that visit these shores every year usually include among them a statesman or two. The conviction with which Marcos articulates the goals for his country and region and his personal qualifications for leadership stamp him as an ambassador extraordinaire. Americans can say of his visit here, the pleasure was ours." Ann Arbor Stories is presented by Rumble Pack Media in partnership with the Ann Arbor District Library. This episode was written, researched, and read by me, Rich Reddy, with recording and sound production by Brian Peters. Thanks to the Ann Arbor District Library and their archive staff who continue to help us locate and research these stories. Please follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Ann Arbor Stories, or drop us a line at annarborstories@gmail.com. We'd love to hear what you thought of this episode, and please, if you have ideas for an episode you'd like us to do, don't be shy, let us know. Thanks again for listening.